You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I've said this before in the same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them. And I will do it by whatever means necessary.
I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Latrice Ross. And welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning, Latrice. Thank you, Queen, for being with me as one of my Queens of Intellect members. If you will, say hello to all the intellectual outcasts out there before we introduce our special guest.
Good morning, Montoya and guests and listeners. I am happy to be on the show today. I'm really ready to engage in this topic. I think it's one that's important for us. Just to share a little bit about me, I am a diversity, equity, and inclusion professional, and I work with companies to help ensure that they provide an equitable playing field for all of their employees, regardless of race, gender identity, sexual orientation, religion, et cetera. So it's work that I love, and it's work that I feel is meaningful and impactful.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And with that said, I'm going to turn it over to, again, both returning guests. We're going to start with Dr. Katrina Pittman, if you will. Dr. Pittman, thank you, Queen, for being with us. If you will, say hello to Latrice, to the intellectual outcast listening, and give people a little bit of your background as well. Thank you for being with us, Queen.
Good morning, and hi, Latrice. It's so good to be on the show with you today. And Montoya, thank you so much, Black Socrates, for having me here again. I am Dr. Katrina Pittman. I am a psychotherapist. The name of my company is A Paradigm Shift. And I work with mostly changing mindset. I do a lot with mental health diagnoses, concerns that do not need a diagnosis. And the key to it all is mindset. So I'm excited about being here today.
Now, thank you for being with us. And this next guest almost doesn't need no introduction. I will say he has been part of, in my opinion, one of our most important shows. I don't know if he's heard me say that, but I'm saying it live on the air because we are the place where we dialogue and connect, and I want that brother to get his proper due. But if you will, Dwayne Drawn, if you will, King, introduce yourself to our ladies, if you will, to the intellectual outcast, and let them know about your background because you are the catalyst for this morning's show. It's not necessarily related to your background, but we are closely connected, and you put out a rant about a year ago that we're now, I know you didn't know, surprisingly, will turn into a show later, but I think I called you after this rant, and people will hear about it later in the show, and we talked intensively about it, and now it's time for others to hear it because I think we can make some progress based on some things that are happening in the news, if you will. And I, you know, the reality, let me say this before I let you jump on, King, is I was thinking about doing this show before, if you will, the Ebony K. Williams, for those who saw the promotions, kind of popped up in in conjunction with what we were already planning to do when I called you and said, hey, man, let me turn your rant into a show. But if you will, King, introduce yourself. If you will, dig into a little bit of your background as it relates to black culture, if you will, because you've been through some things as you're well-known as a successful businessman, but you've been through some things to be that. So if you will, King, introduce yourself. Thank you for being with us.
Hey, good morning, Montoya. You know, you crossed over to Brotherhood now after we took that trip to Arizona. We're now forever brothers.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, being on the show. I am the owner of a company called VizX Design Studios. We design and build custom outdoor living spaces across the country. I partner with my wife in her endeavor called Loud Whisper, who she actually does work with mental health issues and mainly women of power business. And women trying to get their just trying to get their lives straight. She has a very unique program on that, and we're working on a conference coming up in September on her program. You know, the whole mental thing. I like the subject about mental health because I feel like I'm a recovering mental health addict. I was the guy who used to think negative, didn't think it could happen, and all by changing my thoughts and what I believe and how I believe is how my life turned around to get to this point in life. But the black issues are a very big topic to me. I feel like the more successful you become as a black person, you're sort of building your own island to be by yourself and on your own island, because the black people think you're too proper or too white, and the white people, you're still black to them. So you're sort of building your own island. So this topic is very strong to me. And I'll let you go, Montoya.
No, absolutely. Thank you for being with us, King, and that background is perfect to introduce this morning's discussion question. If you are a first-time listener, again, I go by the name Black Socrates. We always put the show in the form of a question in a small attempt to take the Socratic method, believing that sometimes you can get to the best answers and ideas if you ask the right questions. And so this morning's discussion question is uplifting black culture. Are we missing something? Uplifting black culture. Are we missing something? And so we got about 3 minutes before we go to break. With each of you, we're going to do it the same way. Latrice will get you to kind of show off, if you will. And so when you first heard this question, I called and said, hey, can you help me out? And you heard the question worded that particular way. Do you recall your first initial thought?
That's interesting. And it's a topic that I haven't touched on in a few years. And I'm happy to revisit the topic.
No, I love it. Dr. Pittman, I know you and I had a little back and forth and talk about kind of where we were going to go. I typically pride myself in that I don't allow the guests to, for the listeners that don't know, I don't allow the guests to, in a sense, prepare for the show because I like to get that raw, authentic. It's kind of a niche of our show is that everything is raw dialogue and on the spot. But with you having a psychotherapist background, and I reached out to you and said, I think it's very important that we don't handle this topic without someone with your background, if you will, Queen. I don't know if you can even recall what your first thought may have been, because, again, we went so deep. But if you could just kind of maybe compartmentalize just for a second, listen to the question, and maybe think, just a quick thought, what came to mind when you thought about or saw the question that way? Uplifting black culture, are we missing something? Can you kind of recall your first, just initial thought, not the second or third thought, but just the initial thought?
My initial thought was, yeah, we're missing something because some things get lost in translation. Can you hear that?
No, you lie. You're good and clear, Queen. You're okay. Good and clear. All right, Dorian, you had two experts jump right in front of you. They weren't long-winded. They were short-winded. You know, you and I struggle with that sometimes. but with that said, brother, again, you know, when I called you, you said, yeah, I remember my rant vividly. And so you didn't see the actual question until after we talked. And so when you happen to see, hey, here's what Montoya's titled it. You've been through this before. But what was your initial thought when you saw the title, knowing what your rant is, kind of separate that when you saw the title? Do you recall what you thought?
Still a complex situation is basically what I hit. Like, there's really, I don't know a resolve, and I don't think any of us do know resolve, because the it's so in-depth about why we're even like this.
Fair enough. And I will offer that there, in my opinion, especially with the help of Dr. Pittman, there will be some level of resolve in this discussion, even though for most of our lives, I would offer, it does feel like there hasn't been. It's been a bunch of, if you will, I call it agreement about the complaints about us, if you will. So I know that sounds a little weird, but that's what it's been over the years. And so it seems like we can't get past that. I hope some of the conversation today will at least begin that journey for a lot of people. We are up against this first break, so we will go to the break as usual. There will be a cut coming out of the break that we will discuss. And so if y'all will, make sure y'all are tuning into that. For anybody out there listening, we will eventually let y'all jump on the show with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you got to try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wine. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I mean, I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping gel or something, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, try the sweet red first.
Okay, that's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's kind of sweet, like I like it, you know what I'm talking about?
For sure, that's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Dipping Gel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay, now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on, too.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com, is that it?
Yep.
Bad.
Nice. So out of the 50,000-plus comments posted on social, I only saw a handful that even considered the possibility of a bus owner being a more aspirational position and recognizing that I am actually speaking and pouring into the ascension of black men when I said what I said. But see, no, some of y'all were too busy naming and shaming me personally and black women in general as undesirable, gold diggers, and much worse. Now, I suspect that some of y'all are the same men that were bringing home C's and D's on your report cards, only to then be coddled by parents that said, well, that's okay, as long as you're doing your best. Well, listen, I love and believe in the excellence of black men. So no, my dear, C's and D's or any other form of mediocrity is not okay. No, I will not create a soft place for you or anybody that I love to fall comfortably into the bigotry of low expectations. So I'm going to say one more time, there's absolutely nothing wrong with driving a bus. My mother Gloria drove one for years. But could it be that black America has been sold a narrative of average, regular, and typical being good enough for us? Well, see, that's called white supremacy. And in this case, it takes the form of conditioning black Americans to happily accept being a permanent American underclass. But see, because I know the truth about black folk in America, no, average is not and will never be good enough for me. And the gag is, I don't think it's good enough for you either.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. Again, I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Patrice Ross. This morning's discussion question, uplifting black culture, are we missing something? Our special guest is psychotherapist Dr. Katrina Pittman, as well as Dwayne Drawn. That cut is Ebony K. Williams. Just to familiarize you as our guest, because I know how busy y'all stay, so you may not be hip to what's going on social media, but that was actually Ebony K. Williams in response to a conversation she had with Ayanna Van Sant that kind of set the internet on a firestorm this week, or a little over a week ago, in their dialogue where Ayanna was on her show, and they got to talking about, in a sense, she kind of mentioned that she didn't feel protected by black men, if you will, and Ayanna, if I'm hoping I'm saying her name correctly, mentioned the idea of would she, Ebony Williams herself, date a bus driver, and she said only to a degree, only if he owned the bus, and Ayanna kind of, in a sense, the clip, the way it was put out, seemingly kind of corrected her on if that bus driver was loving and valued, and in a sense, if black women would value the things they almost in, as if they should, that maybe she would feel a little different. I started with her response because we're not going to talk about the Edmund K. Williams thing. As I said, Dwayne, you can vouch for me. We had this discussion before it was running rampant on social media. I hadn't planned to discuss it. However, in her response, as you hear, she starts highlighting things about black culture, and that's what I mean by this week's, if you will, internet firestorm fell into our lap, because that's where we want to land. I didn't want to give the context just in case someone or you as our guest didn't know what she was responding to, but it was, again, it was her response to what happened between her and Ayanna, and she kind of, if you will, stood on her positioning and said that she was pushing, not necessarily individually for what she would date, but she was pushing, in a sense, the culture and black men in particular to aim, I would say, putting words in her mouth, for excellence. And that was her concept, the idea of being an owner. She went on Breakfast Club and said that was near and dear to her. So I think I've given proper backdrop. Latrice, I'm actually going to start with you just to highlight, make sure I gave clarity, hoping you've seen some of that and all of that isn't new to you. But I just wanted to give a little context. Now, sometimes you're real good at setting the context. So if you will, just kind of jump in and fill in anything I may have left out, and then we'll find out if our guest even knew about that happening this week, about, like I said, a little over a week ago. Go ahead, Queen.
Okay. Yes, I'm aware of it, and it actually made me take pause and sit back and think about my thoughts and feelings on the matter and how I felt about what some women call dating down, and why we use that phrase. And how we can find a way forward. And so I think that, of course, as often happens on social media, things were taken out of context, and that's what created the viral moment. And unfortunately, when a black woman does make a statement about her desires and what she wants in a man, it has a tendency to bring about negative backlash, which we saw happen. But I think it's a very important conversation to have about whether we accept societal norms that are placed upon us, and how we can not allow those things that are typically associated with black culture, like mediocrity, how we can move forward. So I think it's a viral moment that's bringing about a very relevant and needed conversation.
No, absolutely. And I wanted to just kind of give the context of where it came from, because, again, we're not going to spend time on whether we agree or disagree with Williams in
right.
that sense. We definitely want to go to where she was trying to move it, or has moved it since that time, and it applies to today's discussion. So just kind of, again, have to set it up. Dwayne, it looks like you would sound like you wanted to jump in. I was going to go to Dr. Pittman, but if you had something to say real quick, go ahead, King.
No, I was actually saying, because what you were saying was very interesting about when black women say anything about how they should treat it or cause backlash. That was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. All right, Dr. Pittman, again, I know you are out here helping people each week, so I don't know if you're 100% familiar with the Ebony K. And again, we're not caught up in her conversation with Ayanna. I want to make that clear for all the listeners. However, that response that we heard was the idea of, she's saying, hey, I'm never going to accept us in anything but excellence. I have a couple of issues with the tone of that response, but I'll let you kind of just jump in and hear me, let me know what you heard before I kind of mention, you know, my thoughts on it. Go ahead, Queen.
Thank you. I was not aware of that conversation that went on last week. But I do take the view of, I do understand her saying what her preference is. And it's not a shot down to the entire culture, but her preference is, okay, I have perceived myself to be on this level to have acquired these things. I want someone of equal status so that we can go forward, I'm assuming, to elevate even more, and not so much as a put down for the person that does drive a bus and does not own it, But in her mind, okay, I want us to be compatible. And for me, it was more so her speaking the ability of being compatible with who I am. You asked me, who did I want? And I'm honestly saying, no, I don't want a bus driver unless he owns it, because for what I also bring to the table.
No,
and
fair
what
enough.
Makes me...
Again, I wanted to... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm trying to move it into the part where she's highlighting that her ultimate goal was to push, if you will, the culture, not to settle for, in a sense, our culture to settle for these positions, if you will, because she said, I don't accept that you are mediocre. You are more than that, if you will. I'm just trying to paraphrase some of what she said. But if you will, Latrice, I'm kind of going to go back to you, and if we, in a sense, move it into that context as what she was talking about, the culture versus her individual dating, your thoughts, because here's what I'll say about the tone. The tone for me was she got asked on the Breakfast Club, and I'm going to play another cut here later where some of what I'm about to say becomes even clearer. But even in her response, I understand what she's saying. However, I said I take a little issue with the tone. And the issue with the tone for me is not just simply a black woman talking to black men. I know that happens quite often. You know, a woman has to be careful of her tone. That's not what I'm focused on here. I actually feel like the tone is somewhat talking down, and I always feel like when that's done, people become unreachable. And so it almost, in that sense, it matters not what you say. It actually goes unreceived due to her response. So her doubling down, as you said, helped create this discussion that is needed. I'm just saying, however, I don't know how well it would be received. Again, her comments about a bus driver aside, but even the tone of what she said she was aiming for, I think could be missed, in my opinion. Your thoughts, Queen?
So I agree with that. And when I look at the work that I do and look at pay inequity, look at the inequitable playing field that many of us face in the corporate environment, many of us find it difficult to navigate to the place where we are the bus owner or the successful business owner because of lack of resources, because of lack of access to mentors and sponsors who can help us. And so oftentimes what we see when someone appears to be, you know, mired in mediocrity is someone who society has in a sense, they become disillusioned by their lived reality, by their lived experiences. And we can't negate that the fact that Black Americans in this country have a difficult way, not to use it to play victim, but from a realistic perspective, when you look at going into corporate America and you've done all the school, you've gotten all the degrees and the certifications, and you still walk into a job and you're paid less simply because the color of your skin, then that has long-term impact. It has long-term impact on your ability to earn, to save, to acquire things, homes, and things of that nature, to start businesses. And so while we like to compartmentalize these issues, we can't negate the role that racism plays in how our culture has evolved over time.
And unfortunately, part of that reality is people – especially if they stay within the workforce. And again, her push was, in a sense, to become owners, which is, again, I don't disagree with her push or the facts that she stated, if you will. But just highlighting what you said, for some people, those things that you just spoke of happening over and over can actually play a role in someone's desire to even advance themselves over time. It can add up. Now, Dwayne, I would love to turn it to you because you are someone, if you will, I would say, has in a sense ascended to the bus owner. So I'm pretty sure a lot of what she said, if you can recall, resonated for you, and your aim is exactly what she's suggesting. And again, I'm not disagreeing with her aim. And again, it's not even about you responding specifically to what she said. I want you to just kind of speak from your own experience, because you have been someone who has kept the aim and experienced exactly what Latrice had has said on levels that people probably will be surprised to hear. We've had you on the show talking about some of you, you know, literally shutting down an entire business because of the level of racism that you face, but it never stopped your aim. And so I think you are, in a sense, a perfect person to have, because I'm pretty sure some of what Ebony said resonates. And again, I'm not saying that what she's saying is wrong. I'm just dialoguing through the nuance. Any thoughts on, you know, what she said in your own life and how it relates?
You know, to the point of what she said, I had somewhat of a moment yesterday. I was talking to my doc. I actually hang out with him every Friday. And I sort of went into the why me moment, like, God, why did you pick me? Like, you know what I mean? And it was more of a gratitude, not a like a complaint. But I was questioning God, like, why did you pick me? Like, when I look around at a lot of people that I grew up with, when a lot of the community friends, all of those stuff in the position that I am in and that I've created in life. And I was actually going to do some type of post on social media. And it was sort of a real post, like, guys, I know you guys see me here, and I know you see this, and I know you see all this traveling, but this has been a life battle. I mean, it's really, I've put my life on the line for this. And there's been a price to pay on the other side. You know what I mean? There's an alienation from the black community. You mean, so your peers, oh, he's this, he's that, or he speaks white, or he talks white. No, I just speak proper because I got to conduct business. And people are spending a lot of money, and they got to hear the exact words that are coming out of my mouth. So I have to speak this way so I could be understood. Also, I never wanted to be a black anything. I know I'm black. I grew up that way. My skin is black. There's nothing I could do about that in there. So why not be the best in business that I can be? Why not start reading, learning, create a better mindset, become a better person? And that was sort of where my rant was when I typed that out. It was one of those early morning sort of moments where I was having like this euphoric moment, like, hey, you guys want more in life, you're rapping about it, you're doing it. It's like, here's what it takes, let's go for more, let's get more, let's become more, instead of accepting the basic life. But the lady who was speaking first before me, I sort of understand it now, because if you're trying to become this bus owner, man, that's one hell of a battle just to get your first bus. And then you got to get the accounts. I mean, it's not easy for us. There's no float money.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Dr. Pittman, just kind of jump in where you fit in, Queen. Again, you are our resident psychotherapist as a part of the community club. But as you hear this brother break down, you know, his own perspective, why him, what he's been, again, the way he's successfully scaled a couple of very productive black-owned businesses. But as he said, that wasn't his aim. And I'm pretty sure you've dealt with people that had to have, you know, dealt with some of the things he talked about. So, you know, in what he said, what did you hear in that point? Dr. Pittman, we lose you? Actually, she may have dropped. Let me get it back alive. All right, I saw where she dropped. Hold on. All right, y'all. Y'all bear with us. We're all on the phone. I got it right here. All right, you're live, Dr. Pittman. Go ahead, Queen.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yep, you're good.
Okay, perfect. Just to bounce off of what he said, not in a pessimistic way, but why me? How did I get into this position to pivot and to make these changes? I think a lot of times, because that struggle is real, because the reality of the obstacles that we are facing, we have to look at them. Are they going to stay obstacles, or are they stepping stones to get where we were or where we're wanting to go? And so in hearing what he's saying about feeling that way, but gratitude to push forward, it does take a lot of commitment to do the things, especially stepping out as an entrepreneur or just wanting to walk into leadership, even if you don't own the company, the challenge to do that. And I believe it all comes down to the mindset of, am I going to look at what has been around me and settle for it, or am I going to push forward? And that is a little bit of this collectivism of what we're looking at. We can say, well, no one else has done that, or in my family, this is good enough, and I'll do it because at least I'm the best of who I see around me. But I don't want to be the best in my category. I want to be the best of the best because it's the goal that we're striving for. And so that's what I took away from what he was saying.
No, absolutely. No, absolutely. And Dwayne, let me say this before we go to this next cut. And so you say, hey, I made the rant. We're going to share the rant not in the next segment, not this one. But when you mentioned that just briefly that you you made the rant and you said now, to, in a sense, in retrospect, you understand it when you hear some of what Latrice says. And so when you say, why me? I know that reality for you is you understand how difficult it's been for you to get where you are. And again, everybody may not understand or, you know, like you said, when they see you now, when they see you flying planes or doing the things that you do now, they may not understand how when you say you're not playing, I know you personally, that it's life or, you know, you getting here has been life or death for you. I know that's a true statement for you. I'm highlighting that because I know part of your why me is you actually understand with how hard it was for you to move forward, being faced with, you know, police coming into your former business because they thought, they didn't realize you owned the actual business and you got tired of it and shut that thing down, right? They don't, I get that, well, you get how that moment alone could have made someone who was already relatively successful as an entrepreneur, which I always highlight, entrepreneurship is a unique skill set. Everybody can't be one. You were already successful by the time that those police ran into your company falsely. You know that moment alone could have set you back to the workforce and you could no longer be an owner. And you actually will understand taking that step. So your why me is, damn, why did I still continue to progress even though it has been alienation for me to get to this point? And you want to bring everybody with you, and that is very hard. So it's something that is absolutely understood. We're going to play another cut by Ebony Williams to kind of, again, just keep moving this conversation along. Matter of fact, I'll let you respond first out of this cut.
About people as a whole.
Right.
And even white supremacy bringing up, calling,
yes,
saying average, like, it to me, it felt like almost attack on the working class and the people that were in them comments more than it was the man you're looking for.
So let's address it, Weezy. I'm glad you brought that up because that is the turn that I took. So at this point, who gives a fuck about who Ebony K. Williams is dating? Let's throw that over to the cycle. So it's irrelevant.
That's your preference.
And
I agree.
And right. Who gives a fuck, right? So now let's talk about my real work in this world, the work God has called me to do, which is to always sit in a posture of elevating, advancing, and offering options to Black Americans for us to have a first-class existence. So when I talk about a permanent Black underclass, that's something that I talked about in the response video that Weezy cited. A lot of people felt a way about that. What the fuck does she mean, a permanent Black underclass? What I mean is the data. So I sent Charlamagne a bar graph from the U.S. Census yesterday, and it listed about 15 different global identity. So again, you got to zoom out for this. This is not about Black folks and white folks in America. This is global. At the top of that, y'all, this is earnings. Indian Americans earn more than anybody else in America. At the very bottom, Black Americans. It's like they were only earning about $100,000 per year per average. Not a few, not half, 100% of their average is $100,000 plus. We were down here at around $28,000, $30,000, okay? Where are white people? In the middle. They weren't up here. So that's why I have a personal problem with a lot of the culture saying that we should not have to be excellent. We talked about this, Charlamagne, yesterday on the phone. We should get to be basically as mediocre, as average, as white Americans. For me, that's a no. I'm going to tell you why. I travel the world. Y'all all travel the world. Y'all are global citizens, and we're blessed and privileged to do so. I got news for y'all. White mediocrity is appreciating fast. So I'm not going to hold white mediocrity, white subpar, white averageness as a standard for the generation of Black children we're raising today.
Well, what does America do without the working class?
First of all, it's not about not having a working class. It's saying that why do Black people, I'm so glad you asked this, why do Black people disproportionately occupy it? Now, you made a very good point yesterday, Charlamagne, talking about essential workers, okay? America found out, if we didn't know before, how essential our bus drivers, our MTA drivers, our home health nurses, our custodians, our grocery store workers
fast food,
all of it, during COVID. And God knows we were ringing those pots and shouting them out, and God bless our essential workers. Nobody loves them more than your girl here. But you know what I don't love is that Black folks died at a 2-to-1 rate of during COVID, that black folks were on ventilators more often during COVID. And part of the reason why that was the case, y'all, is because we over-index in the blue-collar working sector, in the essential jobs, and many of us don't have the option that we all had, which was to do our jobs virtually. So we are on the front lines in a way that disproportionately makes us vulnerable. We're dying because of it. That is my issue, not to disrespect these people.
I feel like you changed.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Latrice Ross. This morning's discussion question, uplifting black culture, are we missing something? Our special guest is Dr. Katrina Pittman and Dwayne Drawn. If you will, Dwayne, assuming that's your first time hearing that, whether you heard it or not, just want to hear your thoughts in hearing it, if you will, King.
You know, believe it or not, Montoya, I really don't even watch TV or pay attention. You just get so busy. I can't even keep up with social media anymore. Like, you know, I post and go. You know, here's the scary part I have about this topic. I got to be even more relaxed on this show. And I'm watching what I say because I feel like this is like another Bill Cosby moment. Like when Bill Cosby was speaking about mediocrity and black people, he was like at the forefront of what was going on. And one, the white people came after him and the black people came after him too. And I believe maybe how he said it was a little too harsh, but I mean, how nicely do you need to be when he worked his tail off and he knows what it takes and he's seen the N words. He probably was the guy who saw, you mean, eating in a certain room that you couldn't be a part of here. And he's like, okay, if you work hard, you can create something. Why do you keep sending each other to go work at Amazon? Like I was at the airport one day hanging out, getting ready for a flight. Some young brother came to me, got to talking to me and found out I was from Chicago. First, hey man, you know, I want to move to Chicago, dog. You know, what's the minimum wage there, my man? What's the minimum wage? And I'm looking like, bro, I don't know what the hell minimum wage is. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have no clue. That's not my first focus. And, like I said, there's just so many levels to this because he's only being honest. He's only being what he's been taught. He's been taught to go find a minimum wage job. He's been taught to go fight it out and go make this, you mean, $10 an hour. That's what he's been taught. So how can I get upset at him?
Great questions, and we're going to put that in context. This is what Latrice is very good at. So I'm going to take an attempt to dialogue about the context. I'm going to warn anybody listening that quite often when we get into the context, I feel like what we do best is offer context and perspective. But I will offer, especially for first-time listeners, that some of context will sound like an excuse. I'm going ahead and pre-warning you because I need you to listen through it as not an excuse and understand the context. And Dwayne started going there a little bit, right? Like he's saying, hey, based on how he's living, he can't answer that young man's questions. But on the flip side, you know, it for him individually, I hear you saying, Dwayne, that's a little frustrating to know that his aim, but you're also having to realistically understand where he's coming from. And so that balance quite often makes us feel like we can't get anywhere. And I will offer this context, let Latrice jump in, and again, just understand context isn't an excuse. It's something to absolutely be aware of. So in what Ebony said, I can listen to what she just said on the Breakfast Club right there, and I could say I agree with 100% with what she said. I could say that. However, I offer that it's lacking context, and the lacking context is this. I'm not happy with us dying 2-to-1. Latrice, she's been on the show, but we talked about those realities during the pandemic when we were dying 2-to-1 despite the misinformation that was being put out there. You know, that was our unfortunate reality. And as me and Latrice have talked about on a previous show, specifically, you know, since Ebony went there to highlight that we are over-indexed, as she said, in these essential jobs. And her concern is the fact that we are, and I believe her. Her sincere passion is aggravation with the fact that we are over-indexed. However, the context is always the why. The why isn't simply that young man's aim, for example, that Dwayne gave in his example. It's not that we are settling to be in those positions in the way that we quite often say. So in her pushing for us to aim for more, her tone is as if that we're just simply okay with it, quote unquote, as a culture, when the reality is that some are okay, but why are they okay? The why we are okay is if during your transgression in your community, wherever it may be, and we do over-relate to the hood, if you will, and you're going to hear that in Dwayne's rant here in a few minutes. But in over-relating to that, some people's real-life experience is such that being redlined in communities in which dropout factories can be the norm, that's not all Black Americans' experiences. But for those that is their experience, we love to highlight the exceptions that get out of those dire situations. The reason we're highlighting those exceptions, because after certain experiences, that is the expectation. And to have Ebony, who is sincere and passionate in saying she doesn't want our people to focus on being there, it leaves out the reality of how unique it is to navigate certain circumstances and have a better mindset based on some people being in a situation where their needs are not being met. And that, unfortunately, has been by design, which sounds like an excuse, but we cannot disregard that design and say 40 years later, 50 years later, 60 years, 70 years later, after that design, people should just figure it out when what we're watching is the design work perfectly. Your thoughts, Latrice?
Okay, so I've been waiting to jump in. So when we look at things from a corporate perspective and when we take into account what she said about Black people holding disproportionately a large number of roles in those lower level positions, in the corporate world, black workers continue to face ongoing challenges like racism and bias. But even as we, when we think about, let's take that piece for a moment. We hold those lower, we disproportionately hold lower roles in companies. And even in those roles, we're paid less than. We typically don't have supervisor support. We don't have sponsors. And we're paid less than. And a study by McKinsey has indicated that it's going to take 95 years for Black people to reach wage parity with white people. Mm. 95 years. Presently, on average, Black men are paid just 71 cents for every dollar that white men are paid. And Black women, on average, are paid 63 cents for every dollar that a white man earns. That's big. If you're saving and hoping to have your hopes and dreams of owning the bus, but yet we're paid less than, the cost of living is constantly rising. When we think about the unhoused and how many of us, 95% of the unhoused population here in Atlanta are Black people because we can't afford the cost of living. And so there are so many factors that add context to what Ebony K. Williams was saying. And if we don't take the time to look at the root cause of the situations that placed us here, we're going to sound tone deaf, as she did. When I think about when you do rise to those levels, Melody Hobson, and I'm going to stop after this. Melody Hobson, she is a Black fund manager. Many people know her. She's done an amazing TED Talk. She's married to George Lucas. But she shared once how she was in one of those rooms where she was the only one, and she was asked if she was the help and if she was on the wrong floor. Another time, another situation she shared where she was in that space, there was not even a ladies' room on the floor, on the top level, where those discussions and decisions and where the power is being wielded. And so while Ebony K. Williams has risen to that place, there are others who are constantly striving and trying to fight the disillusionment that comes with constantly being knocked down, constantly being discriminated against, constantly being told no. And yes, there are exceptions, but why aren't there? Why doesn't this become the norm? And when we ask that question and we begin to peel back the layers, it doesn't become the norm because of the narrative that society has written about Black people, the narrative that continues to play out in the corporate sphere when we look at how we get paid.
No, so true. We're up against the break. Dr. Pittman will get your thoughts, and we're also going to share the rent that we keep talking about that Dwayne gave. And, again, it's going to give more context. We just want to dig through it. For the callers that are out there, I see you out there. You do have to press 1 if y'all want to join this discussion. For the people that are online, the number to just join is 646-787-1691. Again, you do have to press 1 to let us know you want to speak. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Truth seekers, please understand, Mental Dialogue is much more than just a talk show. Each and every Saturday, we communicate with you for 2 reasons, to dialogue and connect. On the dialogue side, we cater to you intellectual outcasts who feel you have no place for honest discourse on race, sex, culture, and African-American business. On the connect side, we've created a community where you can connect with experts specifically in finance, whether personal or business, and mental health, whether it's trauma or to optimize performance, along with all the other skill sets from other MD community members. Our mission was to create a virtual nationwide neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods, and services through social media, meetup, and this podcast. To become a neighbor of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, please visit us at mentaldialogue.com. We are better with you than we are without you. We can be neighbors even though we don't live next to each other. Hashtag raise the culture.
Right into it. Income is one of the ways to measure who's more successful than others, okay? This is according to the U.S. Census Bureau, where Indian Americans rank amongst other ethnic groups. If you look at this chart here, this is 2018, Indians all the way at the top at $120,000 income. Taiwanese is number 2. They're ahead of them by nearly 25%, 24%. Chinese 3rd, Japanese 4th, then it's Pakistani, Filipino, Indonesian, Korean, Cambodian, Hmong, and then Vietnamese, and look where white Americans are at $65,000. Indians make $55,000 more per year than white Americans. By the way, white Americans, you're trying to go to 4 days a week work week. Try convincing an immigrant coming from India, Taiwan, China, Japan, Pakistan, Filipino, Indonesian, Korean, Cambodian, Persian, Hmong, Vietnamese, trying to convince them to only work 4 days a week. Not their kids who are born here maybe and they've been Americanized. Try convincing an immigrant to only work 4 days a week. They will laugh at you. The whole purpose of coming to America is that they can work as much as they want. It's called free enterprise.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Latrice Ross. This morning's discussion question, uplifting Black culture. Are we missing something? Our special guest is psychotherapist Dr. Katrina Pittman, as well as Dwayne Drawn. It's a cut from Value Entertainment. Highlighting that study that Ebony cited, and we're going to play some more of those cuts talking about, if you will, Indian Americans that come from India and how they, in a sense, seem to be top of the chart in many areas. And we're going to hear more of those cuts. And one of my members sent me that video actually over a week ago before I knew I was doing this show, just highlighted, hey, what can we learn from Indian Americans? So we'll get some into that. If you will, Dr. Pittman, just any thoughts on anything that was said in the last segment before we kind of dive into the Indian American analogy? Because, again, there's things with context that we get wrong when we hear those numbers. But before I go there, I just wanted to make sure you gave us any thoughts on the last segment before I go into the new topic, if you will.
Thank you. So in the last segment, I just kept thinking about the narrative of what's projected out there, these ideas of what, you know, when we collectively look at our cultures, what we believe, that narrative that other cultures say about us, we then take into our households. And then from that household, that narrative is then taught, even as young into that child, about the jobs they can get or the height that they can achieve. And although some of those things are real and we have to navigate differently, in the mind, it then becomes self-sabotage. And so sometimes we're settling and making excuses and telling ourselves that we're really not settling, but we're doing our part. We are doing the best that we can do. That's what I took from that, just understanding that when we do these collective comparisons, it creates a negative impact on how we're perceiving ourselves, even as individuals. And so self-sabotage comes into play with me feeling like I can't achieve, or even if that's an option for me to achieve.
No, absolutely. And this gets into something that I think you will love, Dwayne. You're always focused on mindset, and, you know, you push me to always improve my mindset. I usually learn it most just by your example, again, knowing your story and seeing you live it out. But as I hear Dr. Pittman, here's hopefully this will put the full context on some of what's being said here. Because, again, I'm pretty sure, and people that heard Latrice's background being in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space, they probably hear some of her data. And, again, I set it up and said, you're probably hearing it as an excuse, because I've seen these dialogues happen quite often. But as I hear Dr. Pittman, it reminded me of this, and we're going to relate it to that Indian study here in a second. But it reminded me of a kindergarten graduation of a little kid. I was dating his mother, and she told me she went to the graduation, and something that stood out at the kindergarten graduation for her was it was kind of a mixed class, you know, maybe 30-40% black, if you will, if I recall correctly. I wasn't able to attend. She was my girlfriend or whatever. I was stuck in school and couldn't attend. But she told me this when she got home. She said the thing that stood out for her was the only thing they had to do for the kindergarten graduation was get their diploma and say what they wanted to be when they were growing up. And so she was blown away that the white kids and some of the other cultures had diverse careers that they wanted to have. And some of them said, I want to be like my daddy, who's a fireman, you know, something that some of them said things like that or whatever, right? And so she came back because she know I've always been concerned about our community. And she was actually hurt that all the black kids except for one wanted to be an athlete or an entertainer. And this is kindergarten graduation. And so when I say that, for anybody listening, if you're, you know, you're not surprised to hear that. But quite often, if you have witnessed that, or when I tell you this story, the next thought is, yeah, that's how our kids want to be. And we just kind of reduce to Dr. Pittman's point, we just reduce it to that's how we are, not realizing their life experience, the thing that they saw that was successful was an image that was pushed toward them, and possibly in their community, they're not aware of, unfortunately, maybe their parents being in careers that they too may want to aspire to. Kids are not dumb. I want to be. Go ahead, brother. Please jump in.
Can I jump in on this one? You know,
yeah,
this
please,
is.
Go ahead, brother, please.
You know, one of the things you always hear me preach is proximity is power. Who you're around and who is who you become. You know, I believe in that to the core of my being. Like who I'm around every day, who I'm talking on the phone with, my conversations that I'm having, that's creating the level of life that I'm living. I think we really got to open up, and this is not an excuse, the narrative in the room. I mean, if you take, like, I'm 46 years old, 47, just hit 47 yesterday, by the way. And my oldest brother, I want to say he's probably like in the 60 numbers, like 61, 62 is what he's hitting. And that era was just harassed and hounded by the police for drugs. So all of these kids' parents and fathers were thrown in jail for having like an ounce of weed that they were smoking on them, or just constantly harassed every single day. Complete vacuum in the community. And then these kids are forced to be raised without that. The cops are harassing them daily. Like, one of the pictures that I envision in my brain of a black community is there's a brick wall, and it blocks everybody into the community. And behind the brick wall is prosperity. It's the American way. And then there's cops standing there guarding that wall, not allowing these kids to cross the wall. So in almost fairness, is the way these kids are answering, they're answering in a way that they do see success. Like, you mean, as a black person, like, I travel this country like crazy. Like, I'm even my own pilot. You know what I mean? Like, hell, I hopped in the plane Thursday and flew down to an event. And I got there to the event, and it was almost like I was a ghost. Like, people were looking at me like, why? How did this black guy just hop out of his airplane and pull up to this event and look at everybody? And even, I remember a little kid, and little white kid looked at his dad and said, Dad, who's that guy? And the guy like, oh, he's a pilot. You mean? So that was kind of flossy for me, but there was no black people there. You mean? So where are these young black kids going to get this drive to say, hey, I want to own an outdoor living design firm, because Dwayne's living a hell of a life with that company. They're not going that way. They want to be a Jay-Z. They want to be a 50. Like, you mean, even the Breakfast Club and all of them, they're big names because they're freaking entertainment. We don't have nothing for business ourselves. And let me take that back a little bit. I'm watching some cats pop up on Instagram. You mean, I'm watching the Earn Your Leisure guy. As another brother that I follow. He's actually a pilot, too. And if anybody has any contact with him, I've been trying to contact him for months, and he just doesn't know me, so he doesn't know to respond. But they're popping up slowly here and there. I think social media is what actually is helping open our narrative. But that's why those kids are like that.
Right. And see, when you say the why, though, quite often the narrative is we'll just stop at all our kids just want to be that. Like, that's the narrative that mm-hmm. will stop at within the dialogue, as if
yeah.
there's something wrong with us, versus the reality is, as you said, the proximity is such that it makes sense that that's, in a sense, what they want to be. I'm not giving them an excuse. I want people kind of, and I think Dr. Pittman can help me with this, understand how us just thinking that there's a problem that they think that way without realizing why they think that way. So the narrative of us even thinking that something's wrong with us or them, we perpetuate the narrative. And I'm saying unfairly, Dr. Pittman, am I hitting or missing the boat with that? And then we're going to share Dwayne's rant after you respond.
No, I think you're hitting it dead on. Like Dwayne says, proximity is power. So if this is what I know, you don't know what you don't know. And so they're living from a perspective of, this is my exposure, this is what I know, this is how I see success.
Yeah, so unfortunately, psychologically, it bothers us to see our children do that. But let me go into this rant, and this is going to take us a little deeper. So about a year, I think it's been about a year ago, says Dwayne wrote this on Facebook. He said, for the life of me, I can't figure out why most, not all, black culture is associated with mediocrity, meanness, ghetto, or lack of. There is a dark energy that is forced upon us, for us, by us. Like, people can't get a golden retriever dog. They have to have pit bulls, Rottweilers, or other tough dogs. Pet fish can't be goldfish or happy lost Debos. They have to be piranhas, Oscars, or other mean ass fish. Our environment has to be based upon living in the hood. We can't be associated with the nicer suburbs or better living conditions without our people's ridicule. The store owner in the communities don't even give a shit about what and how they sell things to us, and we accept it. The streets are littered with trash, and you can watch the people do it over and over again. A black person can't just speak well. They're either talking white or considered a sellout. Our women can't be women. They have to be referred to as bitches and hoes. Can someone please tell me why so many of these negative images have to be placed on our communities? Why do we accept this as our standard? And I would highlight quite often for those who, if particularly that are in those locations, in those quote-unquote hoods, because, again, all African-Americans are not in the hood, despite our proximity as you know, to a degree, or despite what rap music tells you or whatever. Again, and I'm not trying to separate. I'm just highlighting that's not everybody's reality. Or even for those in that reality who are fortunate enough to, in a sense, escape that the type of thinking that you just heard him rant about, the reality is quite often in a different environment, they absolutely do act very different. So when that question is asked, and Dwayne's not in this space now, he was just ranting, like we said, that morning, you know, over a year ago. But in asking the why is the reality that, to a degree, that we just spoke of, Let me go to this top of the hour to break, and we're going to move into how we look at those in those positions versus how we love to highlight these other cultures. So that'll be the dialogue coming out of the break. For the listeners out there that want to get in, I see a bunch of you, please hit one if you want to speak. If you're just enjoying it via the phone, no problem. If you're listening online, the number to get in is 646-787-1691. Again, you do have to press one to let us know you want to speak. We'll be right back. But all I ask is that you do.
Hey, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand. It's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses made $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies' gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money.
Everywhere I go, go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, talk, they still know it's me. Cause I look like money, smell like money, talk like money.
Kind of take a deep dive with some of these other stats. Indian population living in poverty amongst percentage-wise with Americans. All Americans, roughly 13% of Americans live in poverty. All Asians, it's 10%. Look at Indians. Only 6% of all Indians in America live in poverty. Now, let's look at education. What percentage of them have bachelor's degrees? What percentage of them have master's or MBAs? And what degrees they have? Look at this year. In 2021, 80% of Indian immigrants over 25 years old or older reported having at least a bachelor's degree versus only a third of all foreign-born and U.S.-born adults. Again, 80% versus 33%. 80% of 25 and older have a degree, four-year degree. 49% of Indian immigrants adults have at least a graduate or professional degree in 2021 compared to 15% of foreign-born and 13% of U.S.-born, nearly four times of U.S.-born is what they have. Now, what do they major in? Let's kind of go a little bit deeper into that one. Lots of people waste money on degrees that have no amount of high-paying jobs. Most people agree that you plan on going to college, you need to major in STEM to make it a good investment, but Indian Americans abide by this. It's like a religion, STEM. Science, technology, engineering, and math. Look at the chart here on what they major in. At the top, you see the blue, engineering 36%. Then it's math and computer science 35%. Then that 10% at the top, you see it? Business management. So they're intentional about what areas they're going to go major in. Now let's...
Welcome back to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Latrice Ross. This morning's discussion question, uplifting black culture, are we missing something? Our special guest, psychotherapist Dr. Katrina Pittman, as well as business owner Dwayne Drawn. So, again, I'm highlighting those cuts because quite often, again, it was sent to me by one of my platinum level members who's highlighting, hey, what can we learn from, if you will, the Indian culture, who are right now sitting quite, in a sense, you know, higher than all other immigrant groups as well as white America, if you will. And so I think there are some things to learn. However, I learned this from Thomas Sowell, that it is always unfair, even though we like to do this. It's not something we just happens in this country, but we like to make comparisons to black people and immigrant groups. And Thomas Sowell taught me that, in a sense, that comparison, regardless of which country you do it in, is typically an apples to oranges, oranges comparison, that we don't think of it that way because we hear it and we'll say, hey, why don't we do what they do, if you will, or look at how this group comes to this country and performs in comparison to how us as blacks perform. Let me explain the apples to oranges, if you will, very briefly. The apples to oranges is simply this. When you, and this again, this comes from Thomas Sowell. When you understand that the majority of the world does not deal, whether because of resources or want to or desire, cannot travel and definitely cannot move from their country to another. It is based on their situation. The majority of the world cannot move. And so he points that out because he's saying if you are an immigrant, whether by choice or either by desperation, you know, you may be moving from a bad scenario to trying to improve your life, moving to another place. He says, but for the most part, those who have the ability to move either have the resources or have an extra level of grit to escape their dire situation, whether it be illegally, and I'm using our country as an example, even to illegally cross the border, if you will. Not that that's what the majority of people do, but I'm highlighting that the soul points out that is the, if you will, the cream of that class, whether already having the resources or the extra grit. So it is no surprise, and it is quite common, that immigrants outperform natives wherever they move. And to put that in full context, generally speaking, black Americans, when they go abroad, typically outperform natives. But if you've never had that context, you think it's something you're not doing that they are doing, and it's usually not telling the full story. Jump in, Patrice.
So I want to go back, and I want to read something that one of the Georgia representatives, his first speech in the U.S. House of Representatives, Rich McCormick, made. And in this he says, I rise to this occasion to first to just appreciate my constituents, especially those who have immigrated from India. We have a very large portion of my community that's made up of almost 100,000 people who have immigrated directly from India. One out of every five doctors in my community is from India. They represent some of the best citizens we have in America. We should make sure that we streamline the immigration process for those who come here to obey the law and pay their taxes. He added, although they make up about 1% of American society, they pay about 6% of the taxes. They are amongst the top producers, and they do not cause problems. They follow laws. They don't have the problems that we see other people have when they come to the emergency room for overdoses and depression, anxiety, because they are the most productive, most family-oriented, and the best of what represents American citizens. God bless my Indian constituents. I wanted to read that because when we think about the root cause of what got us here where we are today as black Americans, when we go back to the alleged war on drugs and what that did to our family structure and continues to do to our family structure, when we look at the bias that continues to impact us, we can just go to the news and see black homeowners who are pretending that their homes are owned by white people so that they can get the appropriate value for their property. Homeownership continues to be a path to gaining wealth. But if our homes are continuously undervalued, then how will we ever achieve that level of wealth? So I wanted to read that because it highlights how others can come to this country and be seen as a bright light, whereas black Americans who were kidnapped and brought to this country are seen as a blight on our society. And we don't have those who have power standing up and advocating for us the same way that some immigrants do.
And let me add this. I'm sorry, go ahead. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead on.
All right, and let me add this, and I'm going to go to Dwayne next. And let me add our immigration policy when he says one-fifth of our neighborhood is just, you know, native, you know, Indian doctors. Yeah, America don't just let you come here even when you can sign up and come. And so they're not accepting Indians.
They're not accepting a forklift driver
over an Indian. That's not someone that's allowed to be coming. And again, this is not to disparage what, in a sense, Indians have accomplished. This is to break down the context that we typically lack when we're making the apple to oranges comparison. You're not realizing that you're comparing to those who have the ability or the resources or the grit, which makes them the higher ilk. I'm saying that repeatedly on purpose because Black Americans succeed. Typically, everyone that goes abroad doesn't succeed in any culture. So you may know stories of Blacks who went to live somewhere and it didn't work out. But generally speaking, any Black American, if Black Americans were what we say we are, why can't we be like the immigrants? Then the only comparison that's apples to apples is how do we perform when we have the resources and ability to live abroad? And the reality is we outperform the natives, just as typical of any other immigrant that has the ability to move to any country. Because again, how many Black Americans live abroad? That is a small percentage. We're talking about Indian Americans, as again, not to take away from their culture. There are things that we can learn. I'm going to go into that a second because I'm not disparaging them at all. But you're talking about those, one, who are allowed, and it's a country in which it may cost a dollar to sleep on the sidewalk in certain areas. So while we contextualize them as an entire group for what we see here in America, not realizing throughout the culture, they're like everyone else, just like our best. If you compare the best African Americans in this country to them, now it's a level playing field, and I would not be surprised if our top 1% wasn't outdoing them in this country if it was only the top 1% being compared, because that's what we're looking at in any immigrant group that can come here, whether it's Indians, whether it's Chinese, whether it's whatever, Asians, whatever we say, if they're immigrants, we're talking about the top 1% of their society. Dwayne, your thoughts on hearing this, then I'm going to go to Dr. Pittman.
You know, the word, when I hear you guys talking, the word communion sort of runs to my head. Like, I live in, I'm going to say, like, a more of a predominantly white suburb here in Chicago. And my neighborhood is heavily Indian. Like, the area that I'm in, it's mostly all Indian. I see them walking, hanging around with each other. They work together. They were allowed to commune, to have a build a community. I mean, when we go back, and I want to go all the way back to Martin Luther King. I mean, Martin Luther King preached nonviolent, and he was building a community, and they killed him. Okay, like I don't think people realize that. You know what I mean, they, this man was nonviolent. Don't hit me. Don't shoot me. They beat and kicked, and they killed him. You mean, and that's what he was preaching. And then we have like a Malcolm X, who said, "Hey, let's fight. Let's fight. Let's fight. Let's battle this." And they taught us not to like him. So one of the biggest things that the Black community has is that we've never been allowed to commune, to have a community other than church. Church was the safe way, so everybody came to church on Sunday and they spoke that. But it really was an education on life, how to be, how to act. Like if we was really hardcore in the country, like some of the other countries is, we wouldn't even let the cops come through our neighborhood and harass us, but we allow that. Like, you know what I mean? I hate saying on the radio, but I'm still surprised Zimmerman is still walking the street. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have that sense of community like these other people were allowed to have. And I want to use allowed because they don't harass the Chinese people for having their groups and events. They don't harass the Indian people for having their groups and events. You go to any Black club, any Black party. I was just in Columbus, Ohio just recently, and I was walking all the clubs, and all the clubs was on the same street, and I instantly knew when I got to the Black club, there was four cops out there frisking everybody. And I said, and I'm like, why is all these clubs out here, you can just walk in and out, but the Black club, you got to go do all this.
No, that's a great thought. Brother Kevin wants to jump in. Dr. Pittman, I got about a minute before break. Do you have a quick thought before we go to break?
No, you can go ahead and go to break.
All right, sounds good. Kevin, I don't want to cut you off, so I'm going to go to break a little early and let you get your full thought in. Kevin from South Carolina is definitely trying to get in on this thing. For anybody else that wants to get in, the number is 646-787-1691. You do have to press 1 to let us know you want to speak. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you gotta try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wines. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, try this sweet red first.
That's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's kind of sweet like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure, that's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Zinfandel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay, now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on too.
Oh yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com, is that it?
Yep.
Bad.
It's very common for multiple Indian families to share a home while building a business together and continuously expanding the business. So it's almost like the concept of delayed gratification. Hey, let's live together. Let's minimize expenses. Let's put all the money we're making back into the business rather than splurging and wasting money all over the place. A couple other things to be thinking about. When it comes down to divorce rates, did you know Indian Americans have the lowest divorce rates in America? Very interesting, right? Now, some of you are going to say, well, of course they have the lowest divorce rates in America because they have arranged marriages. They may in India, but not necessarily all in America. It does happen, but it's not as high of a number as it is. And Indian is gradually going away anyways. Well, let's look at the stats here. According to National Center for Family and Marriage Research, blacks, they have the highest divorce rate, 30.8%. Hispanics are 18.5%. Whites are 15.1%. Other is 12.4%. But for Indian families, you ready? There's some studies that say 1.3% and some that show 6%, but they're lower than anybody else when it comes down to this. Obviously, some of it has to do with culture, ritual, all of that, but they have a lower divorce rate than others. Again, this is purely based on statistics. A couple other things. We looked at this website called IndiaParenting.com, and we saw these 10 things that they do as parenting that's different than others. Some of it, you may say, I had some of that with my parents, or I apply some of it myself. And some of you may say, yeah, we definitely don't do that in America. Here, let me kind of go through it. Number one, they promote kinship. Indian parents make it a point to foster relationships and association with their social and family acquaintances. They edify their children to be in social connections and also maintain healthy connections with their relatives. More so, they stay as shelter beside their children till they are married off, right from the children's infant ages to their marriage times. Even after that, the parents support their youngsters emotionally in order to provide the much-needed support. Ideal Indian parents create a social environment where the concept of family is expanded to all. So they're selling family. They're selling kinship. They're selling, let's stay close. They're edifying that lifestyle, and the kids are emulating whatever the parent, the leader, edifies. That's what they want to do. Number two.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Soxer Heat, along with special guest co-host Latricia Ross. This morning's discussion question, uplifting black culture, are we missing something? Our special guest is Dr. Katrina Pittman, as well as Dwayne Drawn. And so I mentioned when I played the last cut at the top of the hour that there are things that we can learn because, again, we're in a society now in communication where everything's either or. While I highlighted the apples to oranges comparison, hopefully if you're hearing that for the first time, you can hold back on saying, look at what they do, look at what the Chinese do, look at what the Indians do, as if we're coming from the same circumstances. However, there are things that we can learn. One thing I would like to highlight from the last cut and I've said this plenty of times on the show, I would love for STEM, if you will, within black culture, to Dwayne's point of proximity and what you see and what you can aspire to, I would love to see our community make STEM our new NFL and NBA. I've said that before, and I'm highlighting that because what does also happen for some of those Indians, again, I highlighted the best of them coming here. It's not that all of them necessarily have resources, but if there are definitely families in India right now that aim – they have children based on how smart that child is that they aim to get, I think I'm saying it right, the H-1B-1 visa. I got one of the numbers and letters wrong. But it's a visa that our country readily gives out to potential students who are going to focus on jobs in STEM careers because we have a shortage in the country in some of those positions. And so in order for United States, if you will, to stay afloat or top of the world technology-wise, some could say we're definitely behind, you know, Japan and some of the other countries that seem to be ahead of us technology-wise. But in order to maintain our position, we readily invite, you know, Indian Americans, Chinese Americans, Japanese Americans who are wanting to say, hey, I want to go get educated and possibly get one of those positions in America or whatever. So I do know from firsthand experience, having went to school with an Indian American that I befriended at the Air Force Academy, he was his family's hope to become a doctor and eventually get a position, make enough money to bring over more of the family. I used to Uber drive and ran into Indian Americans who that was their addict. I was responsible for doing well in school, getting a position, and I would drop them off at their multi-family home that included several families, as you heard mentioned in that cut. Quite often, as Dwayne said, improve your proximity. I am challenging us to improve our dialogue. Don't just simply say we won't get in a house like that, because in that same cut, the guy highlighted that is due to culture. So if that's due to culture, that there is a willingness, and we can emulate it. I'm not saying don't emulate it, but instead of just saying we won't do that, that is how the narrative that we say about each other. You, or if you're in a position to do it with your family going forward, just do it, because when you understand they're doing it because of their culture, and the reality for our community for why we're not doing it is coming up in an American individualized culture that doesn't teach that culture, don't be surprised, one, why we don't do it, but more so, don't see it as a negative verdict about what we will or will not do when, as Dwayne said, we haven't come up and been allowed to commune and create our own culture, which we always highlight our ancestors did that. And we'll say they did it, and we know there's been obstacles to us doing it. So don't blame us, quote unquote, for not doing it. Take the example and start doing it. Let's make STEM our MBA, knowing that the United States has a shortage of Americans to fill that position. Why not jump into those high-paying positions? We can do that. I don't have to talk shit to make us do it. I could just encourage it, and that's how we can to one another. Dr. Pittman, your thoughts about what I'm trying to lay out. I know I went on kind of a soapbox there, but I tried to give a full context that we can have better dialogue about what we want. We don't have to dog one another out before doing something, if that makes sense. Go ahead, Queen.
Yes, thank you. And if you need to reach out to me, don't hesitate. But from what I'm hearing, it's the exposure is all I keep resurfacing, recycling in my mind, is the exposure to what we are able to grow and go with. And as an opportunity for, I look at just with this educational environment, if we're talking about in our household, I was in a household that allowed me to stay in that household until marriage. If that's what I wanted to do, I could do that until marriage. It was that a lot of that IndianParenting.com, yeah, those are similar things that our household did too. So not just looking at it from that perspective, but again, it's, what are we wanting? If we believe that we are raising cultures to, and raising our children and our family to be better than us, we set them up for that. So it is the intentionality of, no, you don't need a tutor because you're behind. You need a tutor to help you continue to advance. No, let's shift your mindset again, exposing them to STEAM and STEM activities, as opposed to, yes, okay, all kids need a time to play. Yeah, let's go play with this science. Let's go play with this math. Let's find interesting ways to do that, to continue to uplift and grow. And I think it's when we do that, we have that inner confidence, so we can't go out there and compete with the world. The wind blows equally amongst everything. It's where we hit the sail. I heard that been said. And so how are we setting the sail to go and to pivot to where we want to go? And with these uplifting our culture is, no, we can no longer be okay with average. That's good enough. We've heard it say, and sometimes we cannot be average. We've heard those blanket comments of, you know, if they're doing it 10 times, we have to do it 100 times to get that level of recognition. And to that, if that's what we are faced with because of, I still pull from the experience of our culture, this post-traumatic slave situation that we get in. We were bred to be divided. So, yeah, we have to overcome that. We were bred to live in survival mode. So if we're in survival mode, we cannot even think and imagine. And be stress-free allows us to be creative. And if we're in a chronic life of stress and instant need being met and robbing Peter to pay Paul, all that energy is pulled into survival, and a little of that energy is only left to go forward and pivot. And so I know that with all being said, our desire to grow better is not to be the comparison to the others and other cultures. It's just that inner comparison to ourselves. We all have, and that's a drive to where we want to go and where we want to be. And it's important that we continue to encourage and lift in the community to say, yeah, that B is good, but why not strive for that A and not feel like we are putting you down because we're wanting you to want that A better, to want that higher grade, but also recognizing that, no, I'm not going to let you settle because it's the same things. The information is right there in the books. The information is right there if you think about it a little bit more. So push, encourage, and strive to do better.
Yes, absolutely. Let me jump in and go to Latrice here before I get to Kevin. Okay. And so I just want to clarify that the clarity that I'm trying to offer the most is you encourage not by having the indictment of constantly saying, we don't do that. People don't understand that you're creating a narrative that people live up to and self-sabotage to, because for what we desire, we have to first offer, we don't do that, when you can just encourage what you're looking for. Go ahead, Latrice.
So I want to say that we definitely, you know, I agree with everything that's being said, and I don't want to be the one to splash a dose of reality onto this, but we have to look at things. When we look at the situation that our community is in, it's a multi-level fight for equity and shifting the paradigm for us as a community of people. Indians, Asians, et cetera, are often promoted into leadership roles within companies. And once they get in those roles, guess who they hire? They hire more people who look like them, and they pay them equitably, except when it comes to their women. And these are things that I've had to deal with in doing the work in corporate America. Let me
jump in, Latrice, real quick. I'm sorry to cut you off. I maybe you're coming back here. I'm literally really focused on the dialogue, having a better dialogue between us, how we talk to one another. While I get that those, and because those are those, their reality, that's why we see those differences. I was just highlighting quite often we make the comparison. I really wanted to break down. It's not an apples to apples comparison. I think we've done that. And so I'm really, really, if possible, for some solution. And again, I'm not saying you're not solution oriented. I'm just highlighting that my focus is asking about the dialogue we have to each other. And I'll give a quick example, and Calvin, you got to wait to the next break. But a quick example of what I'm talking about is, like, I played football for a whole bunch of years of my life, right? And so I'm big on people talking to me respectfully. My mother didn't cuss at me, if you will. And so I wasn't a fan of, if you will, someone cussing at me or whatever. But have I had coaches cuss me out? Yes, but they wasn't cussing at me. I'm going, let me see, watch where I'm going with this. In the event that a coach was mad at me because I did something wrong, it's absolutely okay if he cusses me out to refocus me on something that he know I've been taught, that he's seen me already exceed at, and maybe my lack of focus or whatever got me not to do what he knows I already know how to do. He decides to say, you know better than that, and say a cuss word. That's actually effective. But if that same coach cussed me out on something that he has not trained or taught me on, how could I ever perform, and where would my mentality be to listen to that coach and learn from that coach if he's cussing me out for something I haven't learned? I'm trying to get into the psychology of the dialogue of how we'll say, look at what they do. Then the next statement is, we don't do that, but we're hoping to encourage our community to do so. If you cuss me out without knowing if I know how to do it, tone deafness, Ebony K. Williams, not going directly at her, but in her tone deafness of, I want you to not be mediocre, and you just push for a standard of excellence without knowing, has this person been in a situation where they can strive? Because the reality is most humans will strive given and taught the opportunity. I'm actually going to kill the break for a second because I want to hear what Dwayne has to say about what I'm saying. Then I'm going to come back to you, Latrice. So sorry for the interruption. I'm just kind of maneuver through this thing. Dwayne, again, you being someone who's navigated to the quote-unquote bus owner, how is what I'm saying resonating for this dialogue today to you, King?
You know, Montel, you're bringing it back, and it's like you're keeping it inside the scope of what it is, but it's so multi-level, because what I'm hearing you're saying the whole time, and I think you're doing a good job of it, is not keep preaching that we're not that, because we are that. And what happens is we've been forced to be something that we really are not. Like, and I can only give you the scenarios. Like, I went to Africa, I went to Tanzania in December, and you're in a place where it's all black culture, all black people. And it was a society like a white society. I mean, you had your rich black people, you had your poor black people, but everybody worked together in harmony. You could live, like, the neighborhoods were all black, so there was the nice neighborhoods and there was the bad neighborhoods. The proximity wasn't that close together, where if you live in a black neighborhood now, you mean the financial proximity is too close. So you have the rich people down the street, the middle class, and the poor people, and they're shooting up the whole same neighborhood. I mean, it's only one side of it doing it, but it's destroying the whole black community. So your narrative is actually strong that you're keeping on today, is saying, hey, we are thinking this way. There are people out here like us. So let's not say that we're not doing that. We are doing this. It's a big vacuum of this.
And it's a dialogue that can have more of our babies move into it, because we're teaching the correct way, if you will. Latrice, quick thought. I want to go to Brother Kevin, who's been on hold.
I don't disagree with that. I think it's important how we set our children up for success and what we instill in them. I think that it's important that we are intentional in how we navigate their education. I have friends who have kids going off to college. I talk to them. You know, I know you're proud that your child got accepted to college, but now what are they going to do with that degree? Are they going to go and get a social work degree and get a ton of student debt? Or are they going to take advantage of the opportunities that exist for black boys, black young men, black young women in STEM? Because there are colleges who will pay for their presence and their ability to succeed on that level. Additionally, I think that we need to set them up for success in those fields. One of the things that I've learned is that oftentimes when they go into those STEM fields, they face discouragement because in their little pond at home in their high school, they may have been principals with A students. But when you go into an engineering program or a computer software program, you may get C's. But a C in that STEM class versus an A in a social work class, there's no comparison.
take that C and continue along that path. I think when we did the show with Yolanda, when we were talking about getting more mm-hmm. black people into STEM, how she was discouraged when she went to college mm-hmm. because she got a C in one of her classes. But because she had a support system in place that would not allow her to accept that discouragement, who encouraged her to continue on her path, she was able to successfully complete her degree program. But so many of us, you know, we look at the A's and the B's and the C's and don't understand the work that goes into achieving those in the various fields, and we have to really take a, you know, look at a more long-range view and understand the amount of work that goes into those types of courses versus the easier courses. And so often our kids don't have that level of resilience and grit that they need. And we are culpable in that because we focus yes. on the A's when they're in school versus focus on putting your best effort forward. And if we took the step back and said, put forth your best effort, whatever that is, that gives them room to take risks. But I'm not going to take risks if I risk not getting an A. And I know for a lot of parents, a lot of my friends, when I bring that up, mm-hmm. they push back on me. But it's the truth. There is research that shows if we mm-hmm. don't put our kids in this A-B box, they're actually more willing to take risks that will garner them more success later in life.
Nah, I love it. Because even, you know, again, I'm not attacking Ebony Williams. Again, she helped us create this dialogue. But she even mentioned that in her response, if you will. Are you getting C's and D's? Like there's this idea that we have to, quote unquote, be better than. And I'm highlighting that because the narrative is completely wrong for our youth, and we push it. And when I say push it, like, people are hearing this as though I'm not wanting it to be the standard. I just said I want STEM to be our new NFL and new NBA because we know there is a complete shortage. That's understanding marketplaces, whatever. When I meant, you know, when we heard the stat earlier about the number of people that are in poverty and, you know, in Indian America is only at 6%. We're currently at 17, anywhere from between 17 and 21%. So not surprised, quote unquote, that our poverty rate is higher than the average. We're not surprised that we're used to that, but we reduce it to something we're doing instead of one, the other factors, right? The other factors in themselves are not an excuse to not strive and be excellent, but we try to ask us to be superhuman, which is not the reality. And Dwayne gave a perfect example of when he went to, I think he said Tanzania or Zimbabwe. Which one was it, Dwayne?
Tanzania.
When he went to Tanzania, he saw the full gamut. That's the reality of when you are allowed to have a culture. And so all humans will run the full gamut. Don't make the mistake of highlighting the top 1% of another culture and act like something is wrong with us. Or as even Ebony Williams, who I agree with her passion, is pushing for us not to be white average or white mediocrity for excellence. She is not realizing it is unrealistically asking the entire culture to be superhuman because we have to be so much better than our counterparts. The psychology of that is damaging. Dr. Pittman, jump in with that, if you will, Queen.
Yeah, thank you. That is damaging to our culture. And again, even with that example I made about why can't we strive for a higher grade? The grade is not it. It's that pouring into, I think it's just pouring into your identity and developing a person, pouring into them, and so that they can achieve a greater level of being. This comparison has really put us into a conundrum because we cannot see the greater good. We cannot be in a space of showing up for ourselves, identifying what our desires are. And I agree, if we just give the exposure and encourage the ability to fail, then through failing, they will find it very easy to succeed. And not they, the us.
No, I love that example, Dwayne. How did you become so successful? How many times have you actually failed? I know some of your story, but it's the what to Dr. Pittman's point, you know, we're trying to be perfect or we won't strive. We stop when the police run up in our spot because we can't take it no more. Why you, brother? Why you, brother? And do you see where we're going with the psychology of how the dialogue has to change and no longer accept an unfair narrative? I know I keep hitting home with that, but I think the example she just gave, you are the example of failing to succeed and be this thing that people admire, unfortunately, to a degree, to your point, a little from afar, and you wish there were more of us. Talk about that real quick, King.
See, Montoya, that's why I sort of had that revelation, the why me. It actually started from Thursday, and I'm going to tell you something. Anytime you meet a pilot, he's going to let you know he's a pilot, all right? That's one thing we always going to do. But when I flew down to that event in Bloomington, it was this airplane that we're looking at buying for myself and the company. I wanted to go look at it again. And I've been to the event like 5 or 6 times, but, you know, you got to stay at it. You got to meet those people. You got to understand how to buy and things like this. This is not like buying a new car. This is $1 million aircraft. So going down there, I had this moment where I was looking at everybody, and I actually started I didn't start crying, but I almost shed a tear. Because I'm like, wow, this is my life. Okay, but I'm saying this to answer your question is you're like, I mean, how many failures? I've had way more failures than success. And as you found out, like, you know, when we were in Arizona, you heard some of the dark side. I was even at the edge of suicide a few times, you know what I mean, because the failures were just too much. And, you know, every time you turn around the face and get in the wall. And that's why it's sort of like, why me? Because how many people, I don't care if you're black or white or whatever, how many people can go through that level of pain and scrutiny and failures and falling apart and still get back and keep going? I mean, like I said, the Marine Corps has a lot to do with this. I know it does because mm-hmm. I'm on a mission and Marine Corps taught me how to be on a mission. So there's a lot to do with that. And that's sort of where that why me is like, what God, why did you groom me? And it's the reason why I reach back. It's the reason why I speak words of affirmation and not words of foolishness on social media, because it shows me that God created me to do something, and my job is he didn't put me through this mess for me to just throw it away and squander it and buy a bunch of cars and blow money and throw it out there. Is to put my efforts on my people, and how can I do it? I may not have an activist program. I may not be marching on the streets. I may not be doing that, but can I grab a couple brothers from the scene and teach them how to operate their finances? Can I grab them and teach them how to speak well? Can I grab them and teach them how to go into those rooms and shake hands and create that networking with that white person who's looking at them like they're crazy, but how to take over the game and create the networking? So there's a lot to it, man. There's a lot to this. And there's been a lot more failures than success.
No, and let me add this. And you deciding to come on here for 2 hours when you actually had another obligation, because sharing your story is that important to your people, because, again, your capacity is full. And I love to highlight, because, you know, I call y'all often one-on-ones within your industry, and I try to, in a sense, bring the, you know, the black level members together to collectively say, hey, we understand that one is lonely, but I have a platform where you can give back in a way that fits within your capacity. And even today, you changed your schedule for this. Let me go to these callers who have been on for a while. I do apologize.
Okay, Montoya, I'd like to add something when you get
to go ahead, Queen. Go ahead. Okay, now let me jump to at least one caller. So I got three. Let me do one caller. Then let me at least do one caller. All right, Brother Kevin, you've been on the longest, brother. I got a couple minutes, man. Make it quick. Thank you for coming on. Sorry, I kept pushing you off. Oh, actually, his phone just dropped in the middle of that. I know he mad as hell. I literally pulled him on and his phone dropped. All right, let me go to 803, last 3624. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents in this morning's discussion.
It's me.
Oh, you're on another number now. Okay.
I'm trying to get in. I'm like, hey, boy, he's killing me right now. Come on. Now, let me finish. Don't interrupt. Now, listen, because this got to be said.
You got to go get 2 minutes straight.
This got to be said. All right, this got to be said. This got to be said.
First
of all, it's not apples and oranges. It's apples. See, you're doing it now. Now, if apples and oranges, there's not apples and oranges, there's apples and pork and beans, because we ain't in the same food category when it comes to Indians or any other group. Now, let me ask you something, and riddle me like I tell people. Show me one of these other independent groups that can depend on themselves for their own livelihood. See, we the liquid money. Black folk are the liquid money. Every foreign group that knows when they come to America, come to the black community, because we will make you rich. It ain't because of their success and their education is so much higher than ours. It's not higher than ours. Because when you're dealing with these other foreign groups, they're the best of the best that they got. They're the best of the best that they got. You dealing with, we got to compete with our mediocre against their best. And we still outperform them if you look at the demographics. Because, see, they got to get their money from us. I ain't never been in a Chinese store and see Chinese people supporting Chinese restaurants. I ain't never been in an Indian store, see Indian store people supporting their Indian stores. Because if they had to depend on themselves, they would starve. This has to be said. See, if we're going to have this dialogue, stop having this run around about how smart we need to be, how much smarter we need to be, and what we need to be is family. And these other groups that got their kids and their parents and all this other stuff, that clown you just played, that man, he's garbage. Because these other groups are abusive to their wives, they're abusive to their kids, because I know many and many of them. Like I said, they got these arranged marriages where they're not allowed to go outside their group and do this, that, and the third. If we went to beating down our own people like that, we would be in them same categories too. We'd be super smart. We would be all of these things. But when you see them kids at them spelling bees, how terrified are they? They are terrified to misspell a word because they know there will be repercussions to pay if they fail. We don't put that kind of pressure on our babies, no matter what no one says.
Thank you for your rant.
You know what I'm saying?
Thank you for your rant. We up against the break, brother. Appreciate you. I had to let you get it in. We welcome the passion. We welcome any opinions. That's what we do here. Thank you, Kevin, for jumping in. And we'll get to the next caller out of the break. But we'll talk to Latrice first. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show. All I ask is that you pick.
LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community.
Are you intimidated by money? While this is a question most people never think to ask themselves, but when forced to think about it, many people realize they have unrecognized fears that truly affect how they deal with money. If you want to learn more about money and the fears that keep you from prosperity, join us for Making Money Matter Monday, where money meets mental health with personal finance coach Ashley Thomas and psychotherapist Dr. Katrina Pitts. Every second Monday of the month, find out if you're intimidated by money and what to do about it. To receive a link to this free Zoom event, please DM the Making Money Matter or the Mental Dialogue Instagram pages or contact 404-604-9477.
It happened. Bruh, this is a game, huh? And you know, and these youngsters, thank God these youngsters can't give a damn about what old black folks think. Huh? They couldn't care less. You hear fuck up? Well, black folks is like a bunch of crabs in a pot of hot water. Once one get to the top, they pull them down. That's the water that's making them do that, nigga. It ain't the crabism. That's the water that's making them do that, nigga. It ain't the crabism. And all y'all come with that whole foggy bullshit. That's why they stop listening to you. They don't give a damn. Bitches and hoes, bitches and hoes, all these black folks is mad. They didn't get mad at James Brown when he said, shake your money maker. What's a money maker? It's a vagina that the universal God, not the church, gave you. And when you sell it, it's called a money maker. They all be out there doing what he said. Then he came up with a song, big song. It was a lie. I'm black and I'm proud. He should have been, now I'm black and I'm proud. Because there's one time he had so much conch lean on his head, he looked like something in the zoo. Huh? And so consequently, when you stop and think about, you know, where this thing is going, when you tell me, your son, how some perverted love you got for me, that you got to be twice as smart as a white person, children don't hear what you mean. They hear what you say.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Latrice Ross. This morning's discussion question, uplifting black culture. Are we missing something? As you hear the ancestor, Dick Gregory, in his own special way, giving a perspective that I think absolutely relates to this discussion. I grew up believing that we were crabs in a barrel and not realizing, in a sense, it's the water, it's the environment, and quite often the things that we believe about ourselves. I happen to be in Atlanta, where unfortunately we are number one in income inequality disparity as far as those with money and those without. But I go into those nicer black neighborhoods, the things that we say we do don't happen at all in those neighborhoods, which clearly shows me in a different environment, we are not the things we believe about ourselves. Again, I keep reiterating that story. Go ahead, Latrice, then we're going to go to a caller.
So I just wanted to share a positive example. My BFF, Shay, and you've heard me talk about her before, she has a 10-year-old son, and he expressed an interest when he was maybe six in piloting and flying. And so last year he got really serious about it, and she reached out to me, and we found a flight school where he can attend. And she comes from Decula all the way to the south side of town every Saturday to bring him to his class. He's 10. She made a post a few weeks ago that her son is dead serious about owning his own airline. He's mapped out the route for the first plane. He researched the price of the plane, the budget, everything. And he actually drew out his first few routes that he would have with his airline. He's 10. She's now working extra so that she can save up and buy a plane so that he can get the flight hours to become licensed. But she's positioned herself with her career to be able to do that. So much so that her daughter, who's 27, now has aspirations of becoming a pilot. But she's being hindered by the cost of the school. So I brought this up to say that proximity, exposure does matter. And also, something that Dr. Pittman said earlier, sometimes our people are so stressed out about how I'm going to rob Peter to pay Paul that they can't invest the time that my friend has to invest in her child. Like, they may not have Saturday morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon to spend sitting around waiting on their child to complete a pilot's class. But she does. And more of us have to begin to lean on our community so that we can help our kids achieve success. My friend Shay is just one person, but she leaned on her community to find resources to put her son in a position to learn more. And he's fully, fully sold into being a pilot and owning his own airline. And she's doing everything that she can to support that effort. And with her daughter, you know, one of the things I told her, I said, Shay, we have to develop curiosity. Our community doesn't have curiosity. That's what helped me. People say that I'm smart, and I'm like, no, I'm a Googler. I'm a researcher, and I've learned how to disseminate what's good information versus bad. We have to develop more curiosity in our community so that we can become more successful and not just wait on someone to tell us what direction we should take.
And so,
but in order to do that, we got to stop depending on the A's and the B's.
And my friend, can I jump in real fast? Can I jump in on this real fast?
Yeah, please. Go ahead.
And I want to add to what you're saying about that. Here is where, when I look at my business, here's what is where I hit my ultimate level of success. For years and years and years, I thought it was about business, and I was always stressed about money. I was always stressed about paying a bill. Actually, Montoya and I, we've actually had some recent conversations with this. It wasn't until I started focusing on who I wanted to be personally is when money really just started coming out of the environment. It literally started coming to me like magic. I realized that I learned what happened is once I started focusing on being a pilot or buying a plane, it wasn't building the business, making a bigger business. traveling, spending more time with family. Once I start focusing on that more, what happened was I realized that I needed to read more. I started talking better, started making more money. I started putting myself around better people because I had a different focus. So we can all attain those levels if we started understanding that we got to start focusing on what we wanted to be personally and not let money hinder us. You can do anything.
No, I love it. And the thing is, I can learn from you just encouraging me, right? I can learn from you just encouraging me, and I'm challenging that be the dialogue going forward. It is the first step of solving, in a sense, some of the quote-unquote issues. When the question is uplifting Black culture, what are we missing? I will start with, we're missing on how to talk to one another. I'll give another quick personal example and get to the caller. A quick personal example is you know, speaking of that sacrifice that you mentioned, like that story doesn't surprise me, Latrice, because given the opportunity and in the situation, that is what we do. But we have a narrative that we don't do those things. I'll even slightly correct you in saying we have to be curious, because what you, I know because of the work you've done, and I've heard you talk about this personally, for those who are not curious, more likely they're in environments where that is not, that they're in survival, so curious is less of an opportunity. Right. I know that you know that, but I'm still very particular in learning how to talk. For example, my mother in my little small three stoplight town, thanks to her, is why I've been on the 95th floor in Chicago, Duane, where I know there are young brothers on old quote-unquote old block, an understood term for those in hip-hop who knows about the notorious old block. I don't know which gang they are over in Chicago, but there's plenty of old block people who have never been on the 95th floor in Chicago, a famous little place to go overlook the city. I'm highlighting my personal thing because my mother didn't travel a lot. When we would go on church trips, my church would go on trips, she would sacrifice to make sure I go, because she didn't have enough money for both of us to go, if you will, so she would make sure I went. When I went to school way out in Colorado from South Carolina, I had to beg her to get on a plane to come see me one year. And in begging her, had I said this to my mother, why you won't get on the plane to fly? I see other parents fly to see their kids. Had I talked to her, what's the likelihood that she would have dared have gotten on that plane versus me being encouraging and understanding my mother would be afraid and setting up my aunt to take her all the way up to the thing and making sure, saying, Ma, I will be there when you get there. I got her on the plane, but the way we normally talk to each other, and here it is, we're talking the way we talk, the tone of an Ebony Williams, in the event that I'm pushing for a standard. Yeah, I wanted my mother to be encouraged to take a plane trip on her own. But there's a way I could have talked to her that the way we talk to one another daily that would have never got her on the plane. And that's the start of uplifting our culture, improving how we talk to one another. Let me sneak this caller
absolutely
in real quick.
So let me just put this out there,
please,
right quick. Duane, I'd like to connect with you so I can connect you with my friend Shay and her son Saya, if possible.
Okay. Okay.
So that's a done
I'd
deal.
Love to
dialogue
do
and connect
love to
is what
that
we do best. That's why we're not a podcast to entertain you. We dialogue and connect you. We are a premium referral service. This is not the first time we've had an on-air connection. That's what you're supporting when you go to mentaldialogue.com. Keep us on the air, not for just the dialogues, but more so for the connections. We have hundreds. Let's go to, I don't see your area code, but you are live on the air. However you're calling in, if you can hear me, you are live on the air. You got to make a quick comment. We are up to the end of the show. Sorry.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're good. Yep, make it quick.
All right, well, good job with the show today. A topic like this usually leads to a lot of conversations that turn to anti-blackness. You guys have made a concerted effort to make sure the conversation didn't go that way, and I think people can kind of hear that within the tone of your voice and the direction you're taking it, especially shout out to the doctor for making the distinction between these groups. We really have to understand the 1965 Immigration Act, which changed the coding of immigration in America from this thing of place of origin and race and everything else, they made it a targeted idea of education and wealth. So that Indian group that we're talking about, the only group to compare it to would be the black 1% here. You would see comparable things in education, outcomes, and everything else. It's just within this conversation, the difficult part is we also have to understand when we look at the economic distribution of America and black folks' place in it, the bottom rung of the black distribution, we have to understand how far they've come to look at them in a realistic way. What do I mean by that? I mean the people in the worst of worst terrible scenarios and situations, when that person strives to become a mailman, that's way beyond most of these people who are born either, you know, as Nepo babies or born with an educational advantage. Like the people who are able to make those jumps, the sister who becomes a flight attendant, was educated in the worst schools ever, but they were able to overcome and do these things.
I love your thought. And it reminds me of something that Dwayne said on another show, and I've always said this to him, and I think it applies to today. He says, having the empathy to understand, because we'll say this quite often, our parents didn't teach us this. Well, we are in the generation where we can have Dwayne who's about to purchase a plane that can connect with a young man who wants to own his airline. Our ancestors and our parents got us here. My mother made the sacrifices for me to travel, even though she couldn't. And Dwayne made this point about our previous business owners, if you will. Most of our parents didn't even have that opportunity. They were not allowed into the market. So to even say they didn't teach us is a negative narrative that is unfair. We got to improve how we
talk. Yeah, I would never say that.
Well, I know you're with me. I had to cut you off, brother. I'm sorry. We're at the end. But I wanted to close the show with that thought. I want to thank Dr. Pittman, Dwayne, and Latrice. Wonderful show today. Thank you for making time. We'll see y'all next Saturday. All I ask is that you think.